Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to hour number two of this weekend's big two-hour get-together here on A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups. Michael Harrison here in the anchor chair. And, of course, the program is hosted by Carol Marks, one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism. Here now, kicking off this hour number two, is Carol Marks in conversation with Crystal McVeigh. She's a school teacher and the author of Waking Up in Heaven, a true story of brokenness, heaven, and life again, published by Howard, Simon, and Schuster.
Now, your story about waking up in heaven almost didn't get told because you were sure people would think you were crazy if you told them about your experience. And then one day, you were watching the Dr. Phil show and listened to his guest, the best-selling author of An Invisible Thread, Laura Schiff, and she was talking about her mother, who'd been pronounced dead and returned to life, and was able to have a truly meaningful conversation with each of her children. You emailed her, and then what happened, Crystal?
Well, the funny thing was, as I was watching Laura Schiff on television that day, I really wasn't paying that much of attention. I walked into my kitchen and felt God say, contact her. I hadn't read her book. I'd only seen maybe 25, 30 seconds of her on the television. And so I wrestled with God all day about not wanting to contact her. And when I finally did, she emailed me back and asked if I had read her book, and I said no. And then she shared with me the story of her mother and her near-death experience.
And now let's talk briefly about the events that led to a medical team trying to revive you. And didn't it start with a panic attack and then pancreatitis?
Yes, ma'am. I was having a hard time breathing, and the doctors were running several tests. And they did a scope just to check to make sure there wasn't any blockages, I guess, in my lungs. And when they did that, I woke up with pancreatitis. And so that was originally what I had been put in the hospital for, was to treat the pancreatitis.
Before we talk about your experience waking up in heaven, didn't you believe that because of your history, you had sexual abuse in your life, you had a lot of bad choices, that you were beyond the reach of God, and perhaps there wasn't even a God?
Absolutely. One thing that I never spoke about openly with anybody was the fact that I had been sexually abused from the age of 3 until 12. And I had gone to church during this period, and I had heard them speak about God, and so I wanted to be saved. And at 8 years old, I stood up in church and I asked Christ to come into my life, and I was baptized. However, I thought when they said he was going to save me, I thought that meant that he would save me from everything that I was living in. And unfortunately, by the age of 12, I had been baptized 3 more times, searching for that physical salvation. And at the age of 12, when I was still living in the chaos and the abuse, I came to a conclusion that either God was real and he didn't love me, or two, he wasn't real. And it formed who I would become in my life. And until the day I died, I still was a huge doubter.
Now let's talk about your experiences in heaven. Did you find your senses were just overwhelmed? Did you see any human forms at all?
So what I experienced was the moment that my eyes closed on earth was the exact moment that I woke up in heaven. And I became very aware instantly of several things. One, I knew exactly where I was, this place I had doubted existed all of my life, yet the moment I opened my eyes in it, it was home. I recognized it. I had two angels that were standing to the left of me. I can't recall human features of them because the light that was coming off of them, which I know was God's presence, his glory, but I knew them so in depth. I knew they were as if I was meeting the best friends that I've always had that I hadn't seen for so long. And I did encounter one human being, and it was the reason that God stopped my heart, stopped my breathing, and pulled me in front of him at the gates of heaven, was to introduce me to this small person.
Describe her for me, and what did you find out that she really was?
So I talk in my book, Waking Up in Heaven, about my life as a child and what I went through. What happened to me as a child formed who I would become, and as a teenager, I made a lot of bad choices, and one of which I terminated a pregnancy when I was 19 years old. I was convinced at that point that because of what had happened to me as a child and what I had done, that there was no way that God would ever love me. And so as I'm standing in his presence, with the presence of angels, we're in this beautiful tunnel, and I can see the gates of heaven in front of us, and we're walking towards them. I see this small child in front of me. And she took on a different form than the angel. She was human. And I remember watching her. She had on this beautiful little white frilly dress with bits of yellow. And the yellow began to prism, like a prism effect, around the light that we were standing in. And she had a little white basket. And she would dip her basket in this light and dump it out, and she would laugh. And I remember standing there watching her, and my soul began to swell with love. And I remember thinking, I had never loved like I was loving this child. And this went on several times. And at one point, I remember saying, I'm going to explode, because my soul could not hold all of this love. And right before I felt like I was going to explode, God took it from me. It was as if I was looking at her through glasses, you know, and when he took that feeling from me, I looked back down at her and recognized immediately that she was me. And she was me when I was 3 years old, the moment that the lie began in my life that I was worthless, that God had abandoned me, that he didn't love me. And God let me know that he allowed me to see myself through his eyes, because that was the only way that I would ever believe. And I tell people, if his love was every grain of sand on this earth, he gave me one grain of his love, and it almost destroyed me.
God gave you the message that it was not your time to die, and he wanted you to return to earth and to share your whole story, your whole life story with people, and that's what you've done. Now, you've said that God sometimes gives you nudges to do things you really don't want to do, and you have a wonderful story in your book about how God nudged you. You experience a physical sensation, and the story is all about a waitress and $100 tip. So can you tell us that?
Yes. So the funny thing was, is that even before I died and met God, I was actively searching for him my entire life, and he was in hot pursuit of me, just like he is of everyone. But I would always chalk him up to a coincidence. One day in particular, I had gone to a local Pizza Hut with my young daughter, and she was getting a free meal from school, and I got a drink. That was it, $1. And the elderly waitress brought the drink to me, and I was balancing my checkbook, and I felt this incredible, I call it a nudge, that said, give her $100. Now, I was very stingy with my money, and I don't tip that well. And I argued and wrestled with this over and over, and finally it changed to $50. And I thought, I called my husband, and he said, Crystal, this is God. And I ended up leaving $10. I thought, that is an incredible tip. And I get in my car, and God is just all over me. And he said, that's not what I asked you to do. And I didn't know what this was. I just wanted it to leave me alone. And I called my husband. He said, take her the other $40. And so I did. And I was so embarrassed. I didn't want anybody to know that I had done this, or I thought it was all in my mind. And a few days later, my husband walked into a conversation at work, and they were actually talking about a woman who had given this waitress $50. And he listened to the story, and the woman's husband had just lost his job the day before, and she had prayed that morning, God, help me make $100. It was holiday time, and she wanted her children to be able to come home. And I was her last customer, and she'd only made $50, and all I had ordered was a drink. But yet, she got her $50 tip. And I could see that that was God working, yet within a matter of days, I chalked it up to a coincidence. I say that I let God fall through my fingertips.
Would you say, really, that the main lesson that you hope readers will take away from the book is that even if you don't believe in God, no matter who you are or what you've done, God loves you, and that's a wonderful message.
So my message, people ask me that all the time, what message did he send you back with? And it is so simple, yet for some reason we find it so hard to understand, that God is love, that there is nothing that we can do or that can be done to us that ever stops that love. And more than anything, that he is real, and that he wants a relationship with us.
That's Crystal McVeigh in conversation with the host of our program, Carol Marks. The book that Crystal McVeigh has written is titled Waking Up in Heaven, A True Story of Brokenness, Heaven, and Life Again, published by Howard Simon & Schuster. A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues right here in just a moment.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on MatchingDonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. MatchingDonors.com improves those odds by finding living, altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to MatchingDonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's MatchingDonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security websites. Pages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
Hi, this is Morgan Freeman. Has anyone ever said you're the picture of health? You look healthy, you feel fine, but that may not be the full picture. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer of men and women over 50. Since it doesn't always cause symptoms, you may not know you have it. The only way to know is by getting screened. Screening can find precancerous polyps so they can be removed before they turn into cancer. This is one cancer you can prevent. Plus, screening can find colorectal cancer at an early stage when the chance for a full recovery is very high. Talk with your doctor and get tested for colorectal cancer. Medicare and many insurance plans help pay for screening. Get screened. Make sure you are the picture of health.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/MedicareOnly. That's socialsecurity.gov/MedicareOnly.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and we're joined the rest of the way by our senior correspondent, Richard Neer. Richard Neer's in conversation now with Sarah Tenenbein. She's going to talk to Richard about the decision to have a double mastectomy due to BRCA1. She's a vocal spokesperson for the cause who recently underwent a double mastectomy and reconstruction to reduce her cancer risk from 87% to 2%. The topics they discuss include what surgery entails and her own personal story.
Talk about you're rolling the dice here. When you make a decision to have a double mastectomy, you're taking your chances of breast cancer down from, in some cases, as high as 80% down to 2%. But there are other people who say, well, you know what? You could be among the 20% who don't get it. You could, by living a healthy lifestyle, decrease those odds even more. So it is a very difficult decision, is it not?
It's absolutely difficult because there's ambiguity in the facts. It's not cut and dry. Nothing's black and white. And I often tell people that I didn't have a mastectomy to avoid breast cancer. I had a mastectomy for my quality of life. So I think what people, and it's hard for people to understand who are not in this situation, is that when you
You know, for some women, when you see a loved one suffer through a terrible, terrible disease and sometimes pass away from it, and when you're living this life where you're constantly getting tested and poked and prodded and having false positives, the anxiety levels for some women, and again, you know, I think it's absolutely correct that you say that this is a choice. It's a choice. For some women, it's a little bit too much, and for me it was too much, and it just, I didn't want to live that way anymore. And for Angelina, I think she, you know, watched her mother suffer terribly from ovarian cancer, and it actually just came out recently that her grandmother and great-grandmother also died by the age of 50 from ovarian cancer. And she has children, and she probably said, you know what, my breasts are not more important than my life, they're not more important than my health, and I don't want my children to go through what I went through. And for me, it was also the right choice. But then again, there are plenty of women who find out they have this mutation and do the surveillance route, and that, and more power to them. The beauty of the situation that we have nowadays is that we have this choice, and I'm sure that our grandmothers would have loved to be in the situation that we're in.
Now, on the plus side of doing a mastectomy, if you do this and you don't have breast cancer, there are new surgeries where the nipple can be spared, where the disfigurement is certainly much less than if cancer is found and you have to do a very radical mastectomy. So in terms of the eventual result, doing this preventatively may yield a better result than after you've found cancer, correct?
That's 100% correct. And I think when people think of the word mastectomy, they think, oh, that's disfiguring, you know, you're going to be deformed. And that is true of the mastectomies of, you know, some of our mothers and our grandmothers of the 1980s and early 90s. But the surgical advances have been pretty incredible, and especially when you're doing it as a preventative measure. Most often what's done now is the entire outside of the breast is conserved, and they basically just change the stuffing. They remove the tissue and it's replaced with an implant. It's a very simplified way of describing it. But, you know, the results can be quite beautiful. And some women I've heard, this is not everyone, you know, everyone's different. Everyone's got a different result and a different surgeon. But they actually aesthetically like their breast more after than they did before. So
yeah,
possible.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly possible. But we shouldn't mislead people into thinking that it's a simple surgery now, because there is a lot of fluids that drain. There is an expander that has to be put in there and then taken out. I mean, it isn't something that 90 days later you look great. It does take a long period of time before you get the result, correct?
Yeah, and it's absolutely not a simple surgery. I had, you know, a total of three procedures. Generally speaking, it's two. So as you said, during the first surgery, they remove your breast tissue and put a temporary implant expander. And then over a period of months, they inject that expander with saline to create a pocket for the eventual implant. And then the last surgery you have is where the temporary expander is removed and the permanent implant is put in. And it is incredibly painful. I lost full use of my arms for 6 weeks. You wake up with a lot of, I mean, the pain is what I remember. My husband basically said to me he was afraid that he would never get me back because it was so excruciating for me. And then again, everyone's different. I have spoken to women who said, oh, it's not so bad. But yeah, and Angelina seems like she had a much easier time of it than I did. But looking back on it, I had mine done a few years ago. Looking back on it, I mean, I would not change a thing. That, you know, sort of couple of months of terribleness was completely worth the life that I have now.
And in terms of appearance, you're pretty satisfied with the way you look?
Absolutely. I mean, obviously, if you gave me the choice whether to do this or not to do this, I would have chosen not to have the mutation and to go on with my life the way that it was. But aesthetically, I am very, very pleased with my results. And no one knows that I have had this done. And people are shocked when I tell them.
Well, and it's something, too. I know we have a stigma against showing breasts, but I would think that showing some of the successful results would ease people's minds. I mean, there, as you say, there's going to be pain, and everybody I've spoken to who's had this done said, yes, it is painful, and it certainly affects other regions of the body, like in your case, your arms. But if people knew that there was this light at the end of the tunnel where you'd actually look pretty good and take your chances from 87 down to 2, I think more people would strongly consider it.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I was very lucky that I found an amazing organization called FORCE, which stands for Facing Our Risk of Cancer Empowered, and it's an organization completely dedicated towards women who have a genetic risk of breast and ovarian cancer. And I went to, they have an annual conference, and I went to their conference. This is before I had any of my surgeries done. They had what's called a show and tell room, where women who were post-surgery and implant reconstruction, which is what I had, what Angelina had, that's not the only thing available. They have amazing surgeries now where they can basically take a piece of your butt or your stomach and completely recreate breasts out of them. And the results there are even more aesthetically beautiful in some cases than the implants. And basically in this room, I could see what the results looked like in person. And that to me was very comforting because as much as I did this for my health and my life, there were dark moments of vanity where I, you know, hoped and I wondered that, you know, I hoped that I would look okay at the end of it, because that for me was very psychologically comforting to know that at least, you know, physically I looked very similar, if not the same, if not better.
Sure, and the self-esteem part is part of it, because if you're married or you have a mate, you're worried that you will no longer be attractive to them, and you know, that could cause certainly other problems in your life. So there's a lot of psychological baggage with this as well, making this decision.
Yeah, and I'm very lucky. I have a wonderful, wonderful husband who, you know, 3 months into our marriage when we found out that I had this mutation, has been nothing but amazingly supportive the entire time. Well, after he did the research, he wanted me to get the surgery. Because he said, I want you around. I don't want you to get cancer, and I want you to live a nice, long, healthy life, and I don't care if it's your head on a robot body. I want you around. And it's funny, you know, I'm a bionic woman now, and a lot of women who get this done, you're a bionic woman, and you have these very talented surgeons working on you and trying to make sure that not only do they remove all the breast tissue to remove your risk, but that you have a very, very nice result.
That's Sarah Tenenbein in conversation with our senior correspondent, Richard Neer. And we'll continue this conversation in just a moment here on the program when A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on matchingdonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. Matchingdonors.com improves those odds by finding living, altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to matchingdonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's matchingdonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security webpages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
This is a Driving Today Minute. Even though high gasoline prices have moderated somewhat, they're still quite high. It just makes good sense to do what you can do to reduce your fuel costs. The Alliance to Save Energy suggests a few easy things you can do.
Keep your car properly tuned up and change the air filter regularly, both to save gas and protect your engine. Curtail aggressive driving, according to the U.S. Department of Energy. Speeding, rapid acceleration, and hard braking waste gas and curb mileage by as much as 33% at highway speeds.
So nix the jackrabbit starts and opt instead for slow acceleration from a dead stop. Slow down. The DOE says each mile per hour you drive over 60 is like paying an extra 10 cents per gallon. Inflate tires to the proper pressure. This will increase fuel economy and make tires safer and extend their life.
This Driving Today Minute is brought to you by Bridgestone Firestone Tires. You can get more information like this at drivingtoday.com or by visiting our partners such as autobytel.com, motorsportsforum.com, and more.
You're listening to A Touch of Gray. Check out our website at atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E. That's atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare-only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare-only.
Engine.
Check.
Thrusters.
Check.
Fuel.
Check.
Computers.
Check.
Social Security.
No check, go direct.
That's right, Patty. A few weeks ago, I went online to godirect.org to sign up for direct deposit. It's easy to do, and I got my cash at warp speed.
Wow, it's fast and easy. I'll sign up right now to make sure I'm prepared for our next mission.
Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism in our society. Her fabulous new book, Modern Aging, A Guide for Seasoned Citizens to Achieve Health, Happiness, and Purpose, published by Talkers Books, is a major breakthrough in providing a maturing population with vital information and inspiration to live better and more productive lives. Carol Marks offers practical strategies for juggling work, romance, and navigating the healthcare system. She is a guide through the maze of grandparenting, technology, travel, and retirement, as well as facing the sandwich generation struggle of supporting adult children and elderly parents. Modern Aging by Carol Marks is available now at www.talkersbooks.com. That's www.talkersbooks.com.
If you plan to apply for Social Security disability benefits, there are things you can do to help speed up the usual 3 to 5 month wait for a decision. The more information you provide up front, the less time it'll take us to obtain the needed evidence, and the faster the decision can be made. Information like medical records or documentation, the names, addresses, and phone numbers of your doctors and medical facilities, information on your past employment, and more. To be prepared, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/disability and select Disability Starter Kits.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, Michael Harrison here in the anchor chair, and we're in the middle of a long segment highlighted by our senior correspondent, Richard Neer, who has been in conversation and will continue a conversation with Sarah Tenenbein, talking about the BRCA1 gene, a very, very serious subject, and Richard is doing a good job in this conversation. Coming up in the next segment, we'll have part two of that conversation. Richard, last week you and I were talking, changing the topic here, we were talking about superheroes and the role they play in our society, kind of sparked by the new Superman movie. When you were a kid, did you follow superheroes and comic books, and were you a fan of Superman on television? Were you one of those kids that were into that?
Oh, absolutely.
Me too. And who was your favorite character back when you were, say, 12?
My favorite superhero or my favorite character on Superman?
Well, okay, those are two subjects. Who was your favorite superhero and who was your favorite character on Superman?
Yeah, well, Superman was my favorite superhero.
Yeah.
I wasn't that much into Batman until much later on. I was never into Spider-Man until later. My favorite character, I guess, was Superman himself. I mean, Jimmy Olsen was kind of a bumbling kid cub reporter who got in trouble all the time, and Superman had to bail him out. And I never liked Lois Lane all that much. I kind of liked Perry White. Great Savers Ghost, you know, he used to say all the time. The gruff editor of the Daily Planet.
Now, you're talking about the TV show, which really formulated post-war baby boomers' vision of the Superman universe, was the TV show with George Reeves and Jack Larson, Noel Neal, and and the other one, Phyllis Coates.
Wow, I got it. Yeah,
pulled it out of nowhere. Noel Neal played Lois Lane in the film serial of Superman prior to the TV show. There were Superman productions prior to the TV show. Somebody else played Superman. It was a weekly serial. And then they started the new Superman on TV with Phyllis Coates, and then they replaced her with Noel Neal. Did you know that?
Yes. Yep. I was aware of that. You know, when you talk about, though, if you go into the comic books, my favorite was the Bizarro Superman. Remember, they had facets on their face and they did everything the opposite, and Superman was actually bad.
To this day, whenever something is sort of like weird, people say that's a Bizarro world version of it. It's almost become like a word that means a strange alternate universe. You know, the Bizarro. But, well, don't you love the technique that the comics have used called imaginary tales? Like he would marry Lois Lane in an imaginary tale. Like it's not real. Like there was the real, and then they're imaginary. And one of the things that I do want to talk to you about, because this is kind of interesting, and you and I have never discussed this. Are you a purist, or are you someone who likes themes and variations on a history of an imaginary person? For example, they changed the Superman universe somewhere in the 80s or the 90s and redid the whole history. And they recently did that with the Star Trek movies. Some of the Trekkies are very upset that now Vulcan has been destroyed in this alternate universe of the new Star Trek. Others feel, hey, this is cool. It makes it more interesting. I know what I am. I am a purist. I don't like tampering with the history of imaginary things.
I agree. I mean, it would be as if Star Wars all of a sudden, oh, wait a minute, Darth Vader wasn't Luke Skywalker's dad. It was somebody else in a sequel. I mean, that wouldn't be right. And like you say, in Star Trek, you have to go with the map that was laid out by Roddenberry, and you can do variations on it and twists, but I think you have to basically honor the history, don't you?
Well, I agree. I'm a purist. I find one of the things that's enjoyable about these universes, these imaginary universes, such as the Star Trek universe, the Star Wars universe, the Superman universe, is that they are not just the Wild West of literature, that they tie together, that they have common histories, and that if you want to be a writer in that world, that you are true to the franchise. Because people that follow these things, and I know it sounds silly, but it's an investment of time and energy.
Oh, yeah. And I don't like it when these fantasy movies change the rules midway through the film. Like you're operating under one set of rules, and then you say, oh, no, that's different. I like it to be consistent so that the protagonist can figure out the solution based on the facts that you begin with, as opposed to, oh, and by the way, here's a whole new other set of facts.
Right, exactly. And yet it's kind of a cheap way out, because, I mean, can you imagine being the person charged with keeping track of all the details of the Star Trek universe? You know, when they make changes in the makeup and the Klingons look different than they did on the TV show in the new ones, that I can accept that. But I have to tell you, this whole thing about Spock's planet, am I spoiling this? I'm not spoiling this. Everybody has seen the movie by now. Spock's planet having been blown up. Plus, it's not really integral to the story. But listen to us, grown men, talking about the facts and fictions of comics and fantasy. Kind of funny how we take our pop culture so seriously. Quick break, and we're going to come back. Richard is going to engage in part two of the conversation with Sarah Tenenbein, and then let's come back to this topic a little bit. It's worth continuing with. Richard Neer with us. I'm Michael Harrison, and you're plugged into A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups.
If you plan to apply for Social Security disability benefits, there are things you can do to help speed up the usual 3 to 5 month wait for a decision. The more information you provide up front, the less time it'll take us to obtain the needed evidence, and the faster the decision can be made. Information like medical records or documentation, the names, addresses, and phone numbers of your doctors and medical facilities, information on your past employment, and more. To be prepared, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/disability and select Disability Starter Kits.
Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism in our society. Her fabulous new book, Modern Aging, A Guide for Seasoned Citizens to Achieve Health, Happiness, and Purpose, published by Talkers Books, is a major breakthrough in providing a maturing population with vital information and inspiration to live better and more productive lives. Carol Marks offers practical strategies for juggling work, romance, and navigating the healthcare system. She is a guide through the maze of grandparenting, technology, travel, and retirement, as well as facing the sandwich generation struggle of supporting adult children and elderly parents. Modern Aging by Carol Marks is available now at www.talkersbooks.com. That's www.talkersbooks.com.
Hi, this is Morgan Freeman. Has anyone ever said, you are the picture of health? You look healthy, you feel fine, but that may not be the full picture. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer of men and women over 50. Since it doesn't always cause symptoms, you may not know you have it. The only way to know is by getting screened. Screening can find precancerous polyps, so they can be removed before they turn into cancer. This is one cancer you can prevent. Plus, screening can find colorectal cancer at an early stage, when the chance for a full recovery is very high. Talk with your doctor and get tested for colorectal cancer. Medicare and many insurance plans help pay for screening. Get screened. Make sure you are the picture of health.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and now as promised, here's part two of Richard Neer's interview with Sarah Tenenbein. She's the woman who made the decision to have a double mastectomy due to the BRCA1 gene, and she's a vocal spokesperson for the cause who recently underwent a double mastectomy and reconstruction to reduce her cancer risk from 87% to 2%. Here now is part two of that conversation.
Now, after you had this, did you have to undergo any other chemo or anything like that? But since you didn't have cancer, I imagine not, right?
Right, yeah, so during the surgery, they will take samples of breast tissue and test them to make sure that, you know, especially if you're doing a nipple-sparing mastectomy, they will take samples of cells from directly behind the nipple to make sure that the nipple can be spared, to make sure there's no cancer behind the nipple. And so once that comes back negative, they proceed with the surgery. Unfortunately, in some cases, and I've known women who have gone through similar surgery where they actually do find cancer during the mastectomy. Most often, it's so small that just the mastectomy will take care of everything. But every once in a while, there's something that's progressed a little bit too much. And just to add, my mother was diagnosed with breast cancer at 37, and hers was inflammatory, which means it went from 0 to 60 in 2 weeks. So that was not something that I wanted to risk, because I think a lot of women choose surveillance because most often if there is cancer, it's found at a very early stage. But in my mother's case, as early as it was found, that it was probably about stage 3 or stage 4.
Mm. The other thing, too, is that the test for the BRCA1 is about $3,000. A lot of insurance companies don't cover it. And tell us some of the high risk factors. I know the Ashkenazi Jews, and my wife is in this category too and has the mutation, but they are particularly prone. I think African Americans, there's an extent of that.
So tell us some of the groups that really should look into having this genetic test if they can possibly afford it.
Yeah, so the $3,000, that's for a full panel. So in the case where a family member has already tested positive for the mutation, meaning they know which mutation to look for, because there's several mutations that can contribute to an increased risk on the BRCA1 and BRCA2 genes. So in my case, I'm also Ashkenazi Jewish. They knew that there were two specific mutations to look for because those are the ones that are most prevalent in women of my heritage. And so my test was $800, which was covered by insurance. But I am finding more and more that insurance does in fact cover these tests. I had a very standard insurance plan and they covered it as preventative care. The general population, I've seen estimates anywhere from 1 in 300 to 1 in 600 who have this mutation, so it's really not a very common mutation. It's devastating when it happens, but it's not super common. Ashkenazi Jewish women, I've seen estimates that are about 1 in 40, so it's quite an increased incidence of this mutation. But generally speaking, for women who are thinking about getting tested for this mutation, talk to your doctor because it's not for everyone. Really, they're looking for women who have a very strong history of breast or ovarian cancer in the women in your family, or, you know, a relative that had the disease at a very young age. And then they'll refer you to a genetic counselor who is trained in the area of statistics, in biology, in psychology, and they're, you know, specifically trained to go on this journey with you and deal with the very unique emotions that come along with getting tested and finding out whether you do or do not have this mutation. So again, it's not for everyone, and it's really not even that common, but if you do have a strong history of breast or ovarian cancer, it's something that, you know, maybe talk to your doctor about.
Well, and Sarah, when you mention ovarian, there is also that component, and this surprised me a little bit about Angelina Jolie, in that if you have the hysterectomy, if you have the ovaries removed and you don't have cancer, you do cut down the risk of breast cancer because there is apparently something to do with, the hormones that the ovaries produce, the estrogen. And when that is cut down, the risk of breast cancer is reduced as well. So
it is reduced to the same extent as having the preventative mastectomy.
No, of course
and
not.
And some women do choose the oophorectomy as a means of reducing breast cancer. But, you know, if you really want to reduce your risk the most, really the surgery is your best option. And then there's also, you know, you can also reduce your risk by being on birth control pills because that regulates your hormones. So you can reduce your risk of ovarian cancer by 50%. But the problem with ovarian cancer is that unlike breast cancer, where if you're a mutation carrier, you're given an option of surveillance because most often if breast cancer should occur, they do catch it very early and it's very treatable. Ovarian cancer is called the silent killer because by the time there are any symptoms of it, it's usually progressed to a very late stage and it's very, very hard to cure. So any mutation carrier, you know, we're not really given much of a choice as we are with our breasts, but any mutation carrier is recommended to have their ovaries removed by the age of 40.
Yeah,
exactly. Ovarian cancer risk. Yep.
Exactly, because it does knock that risk out and it does help in the breast cancer thing. Although it may knock the percentage down from 80 to 40, but it's still 40 as opposed to 2. So that's
correct,
obviously
correct.
Something.
And what's so ambiguous about the situation, the shades of gray, is that someone's risk might be 87, someone else's risk with their mutation might be 60. You know, we just don't know. And that's why there are these choices, and it is, you know, to some people, a very controversial decision to have this done.
And of course, there are people, and we might be one of them, a couple that thinks that, gee, maybe down the road, not too far, there'll be some kind of, they've had some success with tamoxifen, that there might be some drug or some curative thing where you don't have to do this at all. You're always holding out hope. And it is hope at this point because I don't think that they're really close to anything, but, you know, you always keep your fingers crossed in these cases.
Yeah.
For sure. And I think, you know, our grandparents, I don't know that they would have imagined that these would have been the choices to have a preventative, to have preventative surgery or to go in for testing all the time. But I'm sure they had hope also for what the next innovation would be. And I mean, there's always hope for a cure or, you know, maybe there'll be a way someday to shut this gene off, but we just don't know. And you're rolling the dice, as you said. That's exactly what it is.
Sarah Tenenbein in conversation with Richard Neer. And if you want more information, go to force.org, F-O-R-C-E.org. Richard Neer returns in just a moment to continue conversation of a lighter nature. That's coming up next when A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues.
I was leaving an exercise class.
All of a sudden, the pain started. My entire chest. Shortness of breath. Very fatigued.
Nauseated. Thought that it was nothing much, maybe just stress.
You're having a heart attack. I'm healthy. I'm young. There's no way it could be my heart. No way. Heart disease doesn't discriminate.
Listen to your body. Go get checked. Heart disease is the number one killer in women, and this is something that we can fight.
Visit GoRedForWomen.org to learn a woman's risk for heart disease.
Hi, this is Morgan Freeman. Has anyone ever said, you're the picture of health? You look healthy, you feel fine, but that may not be the full picture. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer of men and women over 50. Since it doesn't always cause symptoms, you may not know you have it. The only way to know is by getting screened. Screening can find precancerous polyps, so they can be removed before they turn into cancer. This is one cancer you can prevent. Plus, screening can find colorectal cancer at an early stage when the chance for a full recovery is very high. Talk with your doctor and get tested for colorectal cancer. Medicare and many insurance plans help pay for screening. Get screened. Make sure you are the picture of health.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
She's conquered some of the most challenging ski courses anywhere, but with only one leg, the odds were against her even walking.
The growth was stunted in my right leg when I was born, and the doctors told my mother we needed to amputate when I was 5 years old.
Bonnie was helped at a Shriners Hospital, one of a network of 22 hospitals helping kids throughout North America. Shriners Hospitals provide world-class orthopedic and burn medical care, and they offer that care totally free of charge.
The care and treatment the Shriners gave me was a gift. It wasn't just about learning to walk. They helped me to believe in myself.
There's a Shriners Hospital helping kids from this area realize their dreams.
If I went back to the Shriners Hospital and talked to the nurses and doctors, I would say thank you. Thank you for making my dreams come true.
If you know a child they could help, call 1-800-237-5055. Shriners, giving help and hope to kids for over 80 years.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, as we come to the final segment of our big two-hour get-together, and we continue our conversation with Richard Neer, our senior correspondent. Earlier, we were talking to Richard about comic books, science fiction characters, the universes of science fiction, being true to the histories of them, the purists versus the... I guess if you're not a purist, you're a... I don't know what you are. I don't know what the opposite of a purist in terms of this conversation is, but you and I are both quasi-purists. And let's get back to this discussion. The history of science fiction and fantasy plays such a heavy role in our popular culture today.
And interestingly, a man just passed on at 87 who was not a household name. And yet, reading his obituary, it's like, well, how do we not know about this guy? His name was Richard Matheson, just passed on at the age of 87 in California. Now, he wrote I Am Legend. You might remember that movie with Will Smith.
Yeah, kind of.
He wrote The Last Man on Earth, the movie that Vincent Price was in. The Omega Man, remember that with Charlton Heston?
Yep.
And he wrote this little story called Duel about a truck driver tailgating a driver who was going across country. Do you know anything about Duel?
Does I remember that bell? Was that was an amazing TV show. It was a TV movie, I believe.
TV movie and starring Dennis Weaver.
He couldn't get rid of. He couldn't get that truck off his tail.
Right. And you know who directed it?
No.
First directorial debut of Steven Spielberg.
You're kidding me.
Yeah.
It was a very special movie. People talked about it, and it was one of those movies that had a kind of a cult following. I haven't seen it in years, but it was very riveting. Very, very riveting movie. Wow.
And he also wrote Hell House, which became The Legend of Hell House, which mm-hmm. was a horror movie. And in addition, he did The Pit and The Pendulum. He adapted those for film.
Hmm.
He was a TV writer. He did Have Gun Will Travel, Cheyenne, Lawman, and Combat.
He did Have Gun Will Travel. That's Paladin.
Paladin. Richard Boone as right. Paladin. And the original Nightmare at 20,000 Feet. Does
wow.
that ring a bell?
Wow. That was the first time I had ever seen Bill Shatner.
Mm-hmm.
The
Twilight Zone.
Prior to Kirk.
Yeah, where he saw that thing on the wing, and it turned out to be a gremlin. And he said what inspired him was he was on a flight, and he was looking outside, and he was looking at the clouds, and he thought they looked like snow. And he thought, wouldn't it be interesting to see somebody skiing down these clouds? And he goes, well, then, so what? That wouldn't be a big deal. But if there was a gremlin on the wing trying to sabotage the plane, that would be great.
Wow.
And that's how he was inspired to write that story.
And Shatner played the part so dramatically. Hey, looking out there. Oh, and he's sweating. He's getting all nervous. He sees the gremlin. Nobody believes him.
Yeah. Everybody thinks he's crazy. You know, that's a pretty interesting convention we see all the time where the hero is the one guy who sees the peril, who sees that the planet is going to be destroyed or sees that zombies or vampires are going to take on everybody. Oh, come on. And we say, why can't these people see it? And yet, if you put yourself in the real world, if some raving lunatic came up to you and said, there's zombies about to take over, you go, yeah, right.
Well, with zombies, maybe. I mean,
vampires.
You can't get away from zombies these days. And I got to tell you, I hate zombies. I mean, I don't hate them personally. I'm nothing against them personally. But, I mean, come on. Ever since Night of the Living Dead, these people in their underwear, their nightgowns, they can't walk.
I haven't seen World War Z, but there was a Bill Cosby comedy bit where he was talking about monsters and the mummy, and he said, I wouldn't be afraid of these guys. They're so slow.
Run away
from them.
That's kind of funny with all those monsters. Hey, listen, we're out of time. Thank you, Richard Neer. Beverly Santinello, thank you for the fine job you do on the front line as our producer. Thank you, Carol Marks, and, of course, Kevin Casey, Stephen Wiseman, the entire Touch Grey team. Michael Harrison inviting you to join us next weekend right here for another two-hour installment of A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups.